Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Good morning. I'm so happy to have part two of my conversation with Bree Betcher today, Caregiver Nation. Last week, I talked to Bree about what is the difference between neurology and neurologists and neuropsychology and a lot of different things. And it was just great to have her here representing the Rocky Mountain Alzheimer's Disease Center. Welcome, Bree.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Glad to have you back. Hey, you know, I realized last week I forgot to mention that on the 18th of this month, I was invited to come and speak in front of the Colorado Department Board of Health. And so I gave sworn testimony after I had given written testimony to try to push forward the Colorado Act of making sure that people who work with someone with Alzheimer's or different types of dementia have extended training. And that was CCR 1011-1, Chapter 7, and it passed. 2 years in the making, 5,000 hours of work to put these new regulations in place. And I feel like it was a win for the people of Colorado that after 34 years, we are finally getting closer to making sure that we are taking care of our loved ones who have memory loss or different cognitive impairments better in these communities and in these group homes. And I know there are some people that aren't happy about it, but I am. I pushed for it. The Alzheimer's Association was with me. They have worked very hard on all of this. And so that was a big win.
Wonderful.
Bree, I mean, we were excited about that.
Fantastic.
And I have to tell you, we were outnumbered 5-1 by the big communities and the small group homes that weren't happy about having to have new regulations and train their people. But I'm happy about it.
That sounds like an amazing advance. Congratulations
on
being a part of that.
Yes, and I just participated in it. I wasn't, you know, the ombudsman's office and the aging offices and everything really put that together. But I'm glad to have you here to talk about this on a second time about your research. You're heavily involved in the research aspect at University of Colorado Hospital. You have been for about 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're real glad that you came to Colorado. Talk about your focus. What does success look like for you with research? Because, boy, it is a slow process. You can't be somebody that wants answers right now. It's a marathon, not a sprint, right?
It is a marathon, which is always challenging for impatient people like myself. I think success, it looks a few different ways. So I think long term, it's really important to me in my own research that we are constantly checking and making sure that we are looking at the right things, that we're focusing on the right areas of pathology, focusing on the right areas of risk factors, protective factors. So we do a lot of discussion every single month about, is there anything that we could be doing better? Long-term success looks like, in my mind, being able to identify people who are at risk for decline well before they show symptoms.
Okay.
And try to help them get into a treatment and help develop better treatments for those issues.
So what do you think about people who are alone, people that don't challenge themselves, that aren't eating right, that aren't continuing to learn? Are those risk factors for those people?
I think those are risk factors. I think there are many things that aging adults can do to really focus on leading a healthy life and having a healthy lifestyle that may stave off. It may not completely stave something off, but it may help slow progression or at least lower the risk. And I think the research has shown that being physically active is one of the most important protective factors that
right.
we can do. And by that, I mean doing something that gets your heart rate up.
Right.
That can be as hopefully straightforward as walking. It doesn't have to be something more intense than that. But it's something, walking at a fast pace to get your heart rate up is something that would be very, very helpful to people.
Okay.
I think another thing would be so often people talk about doing these brain games. And I think there's kind of a push and pull to that a little bit. I'm much more interested in seeing people do things in the community that they find engaging.
Right.
We do know that if you do something that causes stress, that's not good for you.
Right.
And so that's much more compelling research to me than focusing just on things like Sudoku or brain games.
Sure. I want to give you an example. I told you this runs in my family. One of my sisters just retired, and she's been very worried about developing memory loss, developing cognitive impairment. And she spent a year trying to pick out a puppy so that when she retired, she would have something to do.
Mm-hmm.
Looked at breeds, all those kinds of things. Right mm-hmm. now, we've got her really engaged in learning to train that dog. And I tell her all the time, sis, if you are worried about this, if you're worried about developing the pathology that our mom had and maybe having this turn into memory impairment of some type, stay active, keep mm-hmm. learning. And I think the socialization for all of us bonding with her, trying to help her to train this dog and work with this dog and just learning new things all the time. And not only that, but having family members come over. We got her a new phone so that she could take pictures. This was something new to her
mm-hmm.
And learning to text and all that. Does that help? Are we doing the right thing?
I think it does help, absolutely. More and more we're finding that the social aspects, too, are an important piece of it, that loneliness, that feeling of loneliness
right.
is a risk. And, you know, I think some of that is, again, finding things that you enjoy, finding things that bring you pleasure that are intellectually engaging, intellectually stimulating. And that can
right.
look different
for everybody. Yeah.
But really trying to find those things that can fill your day that you find engaging and staying active.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think those studies are so important as opposed to maybe just the treatment studies, just the what drug can we use? You know, we know mm-hmm. that Aricept, Namenda, and Exelon have a limited efficacy.
Yes.
They work better for our friends with Lewy body than they do for Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
But why is that so important? Because before we were just focused on here's some drugs you can take. Why is that research for you making such an impact?
Yeah, I think so often people understandably are very interested in the treatment trials. Before we can develop really effective treatment trials, we need to know we really need to know risk factors. We need
right.
to know protective factors. We need right. to know who are the people who are at greatest risk so we can target those therapies. So to me, observational studies, meaning studies where we bring people in and we try to learn as much as we can about them over time, will give us better indicators as to progression, resilience, protection, all of those factors that will inform a treatment in the future.
And you know, that you make a good point on that, because I get asked all the time, should I get a PET scan? Can I donate my mom's brain or something like that? And I try to explain to people that it's not just as easy as just, hey, my mom passed away, can I give her brain? It's a big process.
Mm-hmm.
But more important than that, it's important to be in a study so they can study your families over time like they're doing with mine.
Mm-hmm.
Because that gives you more indicators. That gives you more biomarkers, that just yes. gives you more information all the way around
mm-hmm.
So that you have something to work with. If you're just meeting that person for the first time posthumously or even trying to gather information on somebody that you just met, you haven't been able to follow their life, you didn't see where A connected to Z, we don't have as much information as we need. So we're going to take a little break, but when we come back, I want you to talk about how researchers talk to each other. Can we do that?
Sure.
Good.
If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Living with purpose and meaning is the best reward at Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Your loved one will live life to its fullest. Licensed nurses on staff 24 hours a day, compassionate caregivers, 3 well-balanced meals, and 3 healthy snacks are a few key elements of the JEA difference. We also offer fully furnished private and semi-private rooms, meaningful activities, and scheduled outings. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, I'm back with Dr. Breanne Betcher from the Rocky Mountain Alzheimer's Disease Center. And gosh, we're having great conversations on these breaks. We just need to keep it rolling, huh? But anyway, so, you know, questions that we get are people wanting to donate their brain and so on and so forth. And how do we know, what difference would it make if we learned earlier, if there's no cure? But I have to tell you, Bree, I've been working with people with Parkinson's a lot lately. Mm-hmm. They are faced with some of the same issues that people with Alzheimer's are, and yet their outlook is completely different. They really feel like they have something to say about slowing the symptoms mm-hmm. with the exercise and the big and loud that I had on last week. So our friends with Alzheimer's, let's talk about giving them some hope here. Mm-hmm. Why is it so important now? We've never really thought it was that important to engage our folks in the earlier stages, mm-hmm. in the mild cognitive impairment, in the early stage of Alzheimer's. But we do now. We've mm-hmm. learned a lot, right?
We have.
In your mind, what does that look like? Why has it changed?
I think there's... You know, after a long period of struggles with these clinical trials, I feel like we have a lot more optimism now about the future of research, in part because we're focusing so much more on these biomarkers that may predict change in the future. So markers that kind of move in tandem with Alzheimer's pathology. I think a big part of that change is recognizing that, you know, Alzheimer's pathology starts 10 to 15 years sometimes prior to developing symptoms.
Right.
And while that sounds terrifying, maybe, I think for us as researchers, and I hope for the community at large, people can appreciate that this is an incredible opportunity for us to find ways to intervene early before you show any symptoms at all, or even in the earliest stages of symptoms.
And how do you intervene? What do you mean?
If we can better understand what kind of tips someone over into starting to show symptoms, what puts you on that trajectory, mm-hmm. that would be a target at that point where we know, okay, you know, maybe you have some pathology, but you haven't shown symptoms yet. Maybe there's a therapy that we can give at that point, or maybe exercise might slow that down.
Okay.
Maybe there's a combination of things that we can do. And I think there's a lot of optimism around that now, that we may be able to identify points in time where we could do multiple approaches to help prevent decline.
So is that at the research level or is that at the patient level yet?
We're still at the research level right
okay.
now. But
right.
yeah, I think still at the research level, I always want to be transparent about that too. But I think that there has been that shift. Let's look early. Let's look at the earliest stages, including how you're doing in midlife. What are things that we can do to change this course? Let's change
right.
the ship.
Right. And, you know, that's why I've asked Huntington Potter many, many times about, you know, studying the tau, too, because my mom had all the classic symptoms of Alzheimer's, you know, and just like our FTD folks, I don't want the tau people to be left out.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because there could be 5.4 million people walking around with the tau type mm-hmm. of memory loss and cognitive impairment. As there are people with the beta amyloid, mm-hmm. you know, and the APOE4 or 6 genes, mm-hmm. you know, so.
I think we found also that the tau protein is involved in many different diseases.
Exactly.
And it's actually much more closely related to your symptoms than the amyloid pathology, actually.
That's the first time I've heard that. Mm-hmm. But I think that, too. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a doctor. I'm not a researcher, but I think that, too.
And if you think about it, you know, yes, that amyloid protein that's there way before you show symptoms, you could probably start to see that it's not proximally related at that point. It's kind
right.
of a buoy that tells you something's going on. The tau protein, however, seems to be one that's much more closely related to the symptoms that you are showing.
Well, and you know, I think you make a good point. So even our friends with Parkinson's disease, mm-hmm. with their dopamine issues, mm-hmm. right? They now know that there's protein, tau protein deposits in that basal ganglia mm-hmm. where that dopamine is produced.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a true statement?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're starting to, I think maybe some of those symptoms that they're seeing that have memory issues. Am I off target there? Or am I kind of on the right path?
No, I think so. I don't do as much in the realm of Parkinson's, but I think that absolutely that we're finding that tau protein is involved in many diseases. And depending on where it is in the brain, that tends to be how it manifests clinically. And
okay.
so if it's in that part of the brain that's responsible for memories,
mm-hmm.
the hippocampus,
right,
then you will be much more likely to show memory problems.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you researchers talk to each other?
We absolutely do. I'm sure that's something important
to
dispel.
Talk to each other?
Yes, we do. And, you know, I think that's a point that things have changed a lot over the years.
Sure.
When I first started in graduate school, I'm a clinical researcher. So all of my research deals with working with human beings.
Right.
I don't work with animals. And I didn't have a lot of opportunities early on to work with people who did that kind of research. Now it's the case that every week I'm talking to somebody who is in the laboratory, who's doing that aspect of it. They're talking to me, so they get that other perspective. That's
right.
The only way we're going to move this forward. We can't have people in silos working on the same problem, not talking to each other.
Right. Well, take that a step further. Let's make mm-hmm. it a broader scope. How about like the folks in Cleveland that are doing terrific stuff,
mm-hmm.
the folks in Australia that are making news left and right. Do you converse with them?
We do. I just had a really fantastic collaboration with the University of Wisconsin's group where we shared data. We looked at the same specimens together, so the same samples.
Awesome.
And we did a collaborative paper. I think that this is an important piece of moving the field forward again. We are all in this together. We want to cure Alzheimer's disease.
Right.
And the only way we're going to do that is if we collaborate.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And I want people to know that too, that the data I collect, we're not keeping that from other people. We mm-hmm. want to collaborate. We want very smart people to come in and see if they can see something that we didn't see. That's the only way we're going to move us forward. Right?
Yeah. Well, you've got some brilliant minds over there.
Do
you work with Tim Boyd?
I do. Yes.
Good. And were you part of that whole rheumatoid arthritis piece?
So I have not been as involved with that. Hunt Potter is really the spearheader of that whole work, which has
right.
been phenomenal. Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty amazing. And I think it stunned a lot of people.
It has. Yeah.
We're going to go to a break in a minute, but when we come back, I want to talk to you about women in your field.
Mm.
That's something
great.
That we haven't talked about.
Okay.
We need some good young minds.
We do.
In this field. And then you had a piece published recently that was sent to me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And maybe we could talk about that,
sure.
too.
Sure.
So very interesting conversation with Bree Betcher. We stole her fair and square from San Francisco 3 years ago. And really glad to have you here in Colorado.
Thank you.
And working at the Rocky Mountain Alzheimer's Disease Center. Y'all are doing some great stuff out there.
Thank you.
And so we're going to have a good conversation about those kinds of things. And I think we've talked about an awful lot. But if you are interested in being part of that research, I'll ask Bree to give you some information about how you can, how do you wrangle some information about getting into this research? You can't just walk in and say, I want to apply, but you can be part of trial match and some other opportunities, I think through the Alzheimer's Association's website too, of Colorado, and get involved in research. Let's try and make a change.
Living and working with Alzheimer's and other dementias can often be challenging. Summit Resilience Training provides education utilizing non-medical approaches for those who work with our friends affected by dementia. Believing families still need one-on-one assistance, we provide classes which help them understand the diseases affecting their loved ones, offering strategies and techniques for success with activities of daily living and working with confusing behaviors. We offer in-home assessments to clarify symptoms of dementia diseases and help families work together to find moments of joy while living with memory loss and impairment. Education programs instilling person-centered care philosophies are offered for professional caregivers working in communities and homes, which can be customized for their staff. Training is also available for first responders, such as law enforcement, fire, and EMT personnel. We are passionate that people with dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and others, are approached with compassion and understanding, and those who work with them have all the tools they need for success. Call us at Summit Resilience Training, 303-420-6988, to schedule a class or in-home assessment. Visit our website at summitresiliencetraining.com for more information.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, I'm back with Bree Betcher from Rocky Mountain Alzheimer's Disease Center. Bree, why aren't there more women involved in this? That's a question for the ages, right?
It is.
You are young. You are brilliant. If I can say that. You won't say that about yourself. You're too humble. But we need to get more young people involved in this. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see more women in the research field. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that this has been... as you said, this has been a struggle for some time. As a young woman in the field, it's very important to me to provide mentorship and to really discuss some of the challenges that women can face. I think that it's changing over time. We certainly have a group of young women, both neuropsychologists and neurologists at the Rocky Mountain Alzheimer's Disease Center, and I can certainly say that I am always happy to talk about the challenges that I have faced and the opportunities that I have faced and how to work with that. Right. I think some of it starts at a very early age of really talking about science as a career path that mm-hmm. is not only interesting, but something that you can absolutely do and still have a life outside of that.
Well, absolutely. I think they used to think that all females in the science field look like librarians.
That's probably true.
But that is not the case
anymore. We come in all types, yes.
Right? That's yes. Just not the case anymore. But we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, it's actually probably been a couple of months ago now, Dr. Alan Holtzman was here, who runs my study at Washington University at St. Louis, and he's now the president of the American Neurological Association. You had a chance to talk with him.
I have, yes. He came recently. He's really... been revolutionary in how he's changed the field. He has an important laboratory science background, but really understands the patient part of it as well. And so, he was discussing some of the biomarker studies that are coming out and how to advance the field forward. And as you said, has been really an important seminal figure in understanding some of the family-based Alzheimer's disease too.
At that presentation that he did, he presented an idea I hadn't thought about. And he mentioned that he thought that the tau might go all around the cerebellum and that the beta amyloid went to the center. Mm. I found that absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. Do you remember him talking about that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, he's had really great work on how tau propagates, so how tau moves forward, how it spreads to cause some of the symptoms we see, and really thinking about it in a big picture way and not just focusing on one protein.
I don't know about you, but I had never heard that before. You're in the research field, so maybe you heard it before, but I haven't. So I thought that was very cool. So I know it sounds almost counterproductive, but it's very hopeful to me. What are you most excited about right now, excited about in the field of aging?
Yeah, I'm excited about what a turn we've taken to focus on healthy aging, what predicts resilience, what are these protective factors that we can really capitalize on, that we can really understand how people can age in a way that is meaningful to them, where it has no cognitive decline. That's the most exciting to me. Right. That resilience is incredible.
Oh, I'm telling
you. So much to learn about that. And I'm also so excited about the movement towards thinking about midlife and what are things that we can do earlier to help stave off decline.
So I have this running in my family. You know, I try to exercise a lot. I play with my dog. I have a Labrador that will catch a Frisbee all day long until she can't breathe anymore. You know, my husband and I are very active. We plan to take a walk on a couple of beaches next week. I'm excited about that. But yeah, I'm trying to do more and more things. Am I on the right path?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, we were talking about it a little bit last time. The exercise piece is so important. Being engaged, trying to have a good diet, being social, all those aspects are really important. And I think they're showing that the earlier you can start this, it's the better, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not just starting in late life. It's starting in earlier life, too.
Right. And we've talked a lot about research and the status of research around the world. But are you hopeful?
I am hopeful, absolutely. Yeah. I'm very optimistic that we are now starting to focus on multiple risk factors, multiple protective factors, personalized medicine, that it may not be a one-size-fits-all solution to this. I think we've learned that that's not the case. Right. And I think we're making a very important shift that I'm hopeful about.
Okay. Well, now we're going to bring it down to the level of the general public for a minute, outside of the research world. Some of the things, I don't want to be a hope killer, but I get a lot of questions about coconut oil and aluminum foil and power lines and all these things that can cause Alzheimer's, the hippocampal sclerosis, the tau type, any of these things. It's a disease.
I want
people to understand that these are diseases, that these are not anything that a person did to cause it themselves. Yes, we have talked about the impact of loneliness, about not having stimulation, about not eating right, those kinds of things, not exercising regularly. And yes, they can be factors in decline. They can be factors in decline anyway, if you're whether you have a brain disease or not. But I get a little discouraged sometimes when there are these snake oil salesmen that say, oh, we can cure Alzheimer's. To date, there is no cure. But what we're working on is trying to help people live healthier, live more productive lives.
Yes.
And to be a little bit more in charge of their own ship. And there is some hope in that. There's a lot of hope in that, right?
Absolutely.
Let's put the hope in the right place.
I think that's a perfect point of discussion. You know, I always try to balance when I'm talking about protection or risk. These are factors that might alter the course, but it is a disease. And so it doesn't mean that if you do all those things that you will 100% be protected at that point, right? I've had marathon runners who have Alzheimer's disease, right?
It's geophysicists.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I don't want to be dismissive or overlook that. I think it's the other part of what you mentioned is that there are people in the community who really try to take advantage of vulnerable individuals.
Right.
And anytime someone comes to me with a list of things that they are purchasing and they have been told that it'll cure Alzheimer's disease, we have a long discussion about this.
Right.
Because this is, not only is it not founded in science or reality, it's also taking advantage of people in a vulnerable time.
Oh, and absolutely.
And
I hate to tell you, but there's even a doctor out of UCLA that has a book out saying that he's cured Alzheimer's. And if you just come to his little ranch for $10,000, he'll cure you. I want to know if he has refunds for people when in 10 years they have full-blown Alzheimer's. But anyway, your final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think I hope I can convey that I do have optimism about our field.
Me too.
I have a lot of passion around working with aging adults and figuring out how to help people live lives that they want to live that's free of cognitive decline.
Right.
And I want people to know that I really believe in transparency, that I'm not going to offer a study that I don't believe in. Want people to know that this is an alliance that I want to talk freely with the community.
That's right. Well, I'm glad you were on the show today. Thank you so much for the last 2 weeks. And folks, if you have any questions, you want to take a class, check out my website, summitresiliencetraining.com. I have 26 bundles of great information free of charge for you. Listen to my podcasts on all different mediums, including Cruising 1430 AM. Look for the weekend programming. You can find it on my website under podcasts. And I always have lots of information for you. Come back and listen week after week. I love my Caregiver Nation. We'll see you next week on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Visit her website at summitresiliencetraining.com to learn more and join us next week as we learn more about dementia, Alzheimer's, and overcoming obstacles with a positive outcome. See you next time.